We tried to get a few more words into the title of this presentation, but ran out of space on there. So thank you guys for joining us. I wanted to let you know I don't have anything to disclose. However, I do have chocolate for you because I thought maybe you might be a little bit tired at this point. So Dr. McGoy, who's here, and Kevin, who both of them have worked there on my acknowledgements page, are going to pass out some little packets with our business cards and some chocolate for you guys. So,
yay!
I wish that Goo Goo Clusters paid me, but they did not pay me to do that. This is our outline for today. I just have a few things I'm going to talk about how we set this up. We put a lot of gay men through focus groups in Tennessee when we did this study, and I'm going to tell you a little bit about what we found out, and then most importantly, I think, how we use this information to drive our programming in our state. So we'll go over the background, the purpose, the methods, results, and a discussion. So our learning objectives are to identify the common barriers described by MSM using and accessing HIV prevention services, and identify the ways programs can implement those activities. The purpose of this did not include actually looking at the differences between rural versus urban. Since we're a statewide program, I mean, we were really looking to get all the voices together. So I just wanted to be clear about that. I could probably, after reading over everything pretty recently again, I could probably answer some questions at the end about what some of those differences might have been, but that was not the purpose of the study. And I just included a quote here, because this was one of the quotes that I thought really gave a good overview. I didn't know how to use condoms when I first had sex. No one had ever showed me. So we'll go on and talk a little bit more about that. But first, give you a little background of Tennessee, the great state of Tennessee, about 6 million people. I wanted to show you, this is our census data. So, you know, half male, half female, about 17% black, about 5% Hispanic in our state. This isn't really important with age breakdown. But I wanted to show you for 2013, this is our latest data of kind of where our disparities are in the state. It doesn't look that different than other states in the South, but 835 new cases, about 80% male, 63% black compared to 17% of our population, so huge disparities there. And about 58% of our new cases are MSM. However, there's 20% that are no identified risk, and a lot of times if you talk to surveillance folks, they'll tell you that a good number of that 20% are really up here, you know, because they didn't disclose to the DIS what their risk was doesn't mean it wasn't MSM. excuse me. And then about 24% of our new cases are in 15 to 24. That number is going up every single year. If you look at both of these together, I mean, we're talking about 55% of our new cases in folks under 34. And you'll find that in this focus group, most of the people we actually, I'll get to this when we get to the that slide, but most of the people we interviewed were under 35. So it was representative of what we see with our new cases. I also wanted to just show you, even though this isn't about continuum of care, I just wanted to show you what this is looking like. We did a lot of these focus groups back in 2009 and 2010, and we started out with our continuum of care here in blue is our 2010 data. This was baseline. Back then, we weren't actually even requiring labs to give us CD4 viral load. Like, that wasn't part of our law in Tennessee then. That started in 2012, but you can see our progress that we've made from 2010 to 2012, so the blue to the green, and then the white, which is unfortunately hard to see on a white background, but the white is our goal. So our goal right now, you know, is linked cases being 80%. We actually are at 80% of linking our own cases that we test with our funding. We find about half the new cases with our tests, and we do a good job linking them to care, but we're only about at 72% if you consider everybody who gets tested in the state and how they get linked in. And then our retained numbers shot up, not necessarily because we implemented some great programs to retain people, but because our data got a whole lot better and more accurate. And we're really proud of this number. We're going to up our goals a little bit because we're not really, you know, we'd like for this to be 100%. But we were, as of 2012, we're at 54% virally suppressed. And that's with everybody, not just the folks that we're testing, not just the folks in Rowan White. Our goal had been set for 51%, but we're going to be increasing that. These are our 2015 goals in white. So I just want to say some of these increases were because of programs that we did, and some of it was because of data. So I'm not going to take credit for all that, although I would like to. I probably could, but all right. So the purpose of this work was to ascertain the barriers for the use of prevention services for MSM in Tennessee. Again, it wasn't to differentiate necessarily between rural and urban, but we wanted to answer some questions like, why aren't men who have sex with men accessing our services? Specifically, this was from a grant from CDC that that funded us to create a strategic plan for MSM in Tennessee. So this that was you know, we wanted to make sure a strategic plan came out of this data, and it did. And then aligning our prevention programming to better match the epidemic. At the time, we weren't doing a great job of making sure that all of our funding back in 2010 was going toward the right proportions were going toward MSM services. So this is just a little graphic. This is us at the health department. And these are like our agencies that we worked with, which I'm going to talk about here in just a second. But working with our agencies that had the most experience working with MSM to try to really get out and talk to MSM in our community. And I'm not talking about 10 MSM, I'm talking about 500 MSM went through these focus groups. So from April to October of 2009, what we did is issue contracts to three different community-based organizations in rural and urban areas across the state. That was Memphis, Nashville, and Chattanooga. And those community-based organizations, National Cares, Chattanooga Cares, and Friends for Life, hired a gay man, a young gay man in all those cases, to go out and actually do these focus groups and recruit and be sort of gatekeepers into the community. You may be thinking 73 focus groups is a lot, and it is. And there were 517. About 90% of those guys were negative, high-risk negative MSM. About 10% were positive. But the reason we did so many, we were really looking at this. These were three separate contracts, and we wanted each agency to get with about 25 focus groups. And we wanted different populations represented in those focus groups. I mean, there's lots of communities of gay men. So there, you know, young black gay men in Nashville are very going to say very different things than young Hispanic gay men, than the Bayer community. Kevin, who is here in the audience, who did a lot of these focus groups back in the day, you know, was very insistent on that as well. Like, you know, we need to make sure that we're hitting all these different communities and we're not just saying we're going to talk to 20 guys and be done with it and it's going to represent everybody in the whole state. So we did talk to a lot of guys. They did get a $15 incentive, and they were provided a structured the folks who did the interviews were provided a structured interview guide. So we made sure to hit the same six things that we wanted to learn about. So these were the six main areas of focus. First, MSM experiences, condom use, drug and alcohol use, HIV testing, ways in which safe sex messages are received. So this was like what their experience had been, like growing up or while they were in school, and then if they had ideas for us on better ways that they could have received safe sex messaging. And I want to mention about the first MSM experiences. The reason we started out with that didn't necessarily lead us to change something about our prevention program, but it kind of was an icebreaker to get folks talking and to let people know, you know, hey, this is not a church group focus group. Like, it's okay to say bad words, and it's okay to be really honest about sex and to be really forthcoming about what's actually happened. And so it sort of set the stage to let people know they were in a safe environment that was very welcoming. So the way we analyzed this, all focus groups were recorded using voice recorders and then transcribed by the CBO agency staff. And then the data were coded at our office by two Tennessee Department of Health staff, which are myself and Dr. McGoy, who is here as well today. And we analyzed them for emergent themes. So these are our results. There's going to be two of these on each slide. We had six total ideas that we wanted to get a picture of. First MSM experiences I'm not going to go really deep into, but the idea was just to sort of hear about some things that that happened to them or what their experiences have been like. And there was definite risk at sexual initiation. There was definite lack of condom use. And we learned that in a lot of cases, the guys were having sex at very, very young ages to the point where they would not have been exposed to messages that would let them know that they needed to use a condom. And sometimes they weren't really in control of the sexual situation enough to demand a condom. Condom use was fairly regular, actually, among the 500 guys. Most people said that they did use condoms. Most people said once they got into a relationship, though, that they didn't use a condom. And so the definition of when they would stop varied greatly, depending on who we talked to. So some people would say, oh, I trust them because it's been 2 weeks, because that's forever. And some people said, you know, 2 months, 2 years, 5 years, you know, so that really varied greatly. But everybody pretty much agreed that condom use is important to the gay community. Almost unilaterally, they said nobody had oral sex with a condom. That wasn't super surprising. There were some issues with availability. That kind of varied on the area of the state they were in. But trust was the number one reason, with whether they trusted their partner or not, was the number one reason that they said they would or would not use a condom. There was a lot. This was specific, actually, to Memphis, but a lot of people talked about odors and bumps, and that's how they would decide if they were going to use a condom with a partner or not. So if somebody had an odor or there were bumps in particular places, that they would decide that they may need a condom with that person. And then unilaterally, people tend to say they did not like condoms. So, and I like this quote.
no gay guy likes to use a condom. It doesn't feel as good for the guy who's topping, and it hurts if you bottom. And so we're not going to pretend that people actually like using condoms, but they do know it's important. Two more themes here with drug and alcohol use. There's nothing that really surprised us here, but people said that gave him courage. It did hinder judgment. It helps you feel better and relaxed, you feel more attractive. It does enhance sex, puts us at risk, gives people an excuse to be risky, less condom use when you have drug and alcohol use, and more aggressive sex. With HIV testing, most people said they were scared to get a test, even though they did do it. Testing was fairly regular. Many people, and this, again, varied a little bit depending on the region, but many people had bad health department experiences. I don't know if we're shocked by that. You guys are not looking super shocked. But they did say wait time is a drawback. They liked the test where they can get their result quickly. They did not like to have to wait a week to get a call back for a test. Again, they weren't testing regularly if they were in a relationship. A lot of people said if they felt like if they gave blood, they would know their status, which, you know, we used to talk about that years ago, and I think we've sort of think that that's common knowledge now, that people know that if you go to the blood bank, it's not a way to get tested for HIV, but people still think that. A lot of people mentioned schools in certain parts of our state, because we don't do testing in schools everywhere. Private doctors, they liked going to their private doctors for testing. And this one was sort of surprising, but we heard a lot about being worried about confidentiality. So the last two themes for results, ways that safe sex messages have been received in the past. So family, school, bars, TV, gay mentors, church, friends. A lot of people said no messages for people like me. They heard in school that, and this quote kind of leads to that, but they heard about, you know, you use a condom to keep somebody from getting pregnant. And so there weren't messages for people like them. But suggested ways we could improve that is getting messages in schools earlier and better tailored to a range of sexual expression. Straightforward messages, using peers and HIV-positive educators to deliver messages. So I want to talk about using what we've learned. There's six things I'm going to go over very, very quickly about what we've learned and what we've done with this data. We did create an MSN strategic plan with five areas of emphasis, and we've begun executing that plan. And we created an MSN task force out of this. So a lot of the guys who participated in the focus groups ended up becoming part of our MSN task force, and they implement pieces of this plan. It's a part of our community planning group that's integrate to our planning. So we've also done a couple of big events called Thrive 615 and Saving Ourselves Symposium. We've contributed to make sure that the MSM community has this community building events where we're doing education around not just HIV, but around whole health and well-being. Three more things. Condom distribution program, we've expanded that out to better serve our MSM community. We have citywide distribution programs now. We don't just hand out condoms at health departments like we used to. We have added non-traditional sites so that condoms are available in many places. We're in the process of putting together a secret shopper initiative for our MSM at health departments. So we're going to be sending gay men into the health department, and they're going to be giving us some feedback on how they were treated and what their experience was. And we're going to share that with our health department staff. We have 95 county health departments across the state to try to improve how we're treating MSM when they come into the health department and have a better experience. And as part of our CAPIS program, which is Care and Prevention in the U.S., it's a CDC grant that we have. It's a three-year demonstration project. We have a social network strategy program that targets young black gay men. We've tested close to 1,000 men at this point. We found 70 new positives. We have a 7% positivity rate with that program that we're very proud of. But that's another program that we're doing to target specifically to young black gay men. So our conclusions are health departments can develop approaches to reduce stigma, facilitate community building, and expand condom distribution programs to better reach MSM populations, and adapt policies that are LGBTQ inclusive to encourage utilization of HIV prevention services. I want to thank Dr. McGoy and Kevin, who are here in the audience today. These are all the organizations that worked with us to do all of these interviews, and these guys were really fabulous, and it's the reason why this work was so successful, and it's the reason why we had so many people participate across the state. So they're stars. Thank you.